This is Janice Schweizer with the Pantograph for Tuesday, January 12th, 2021. We will begin with the headline article, Impeachment Debate Slated. McLean County GOP Chairwoman Calls Move Political Stunt. This is by Sierra Henry and Kelsey Watznauer. The leaders of McLean County's political parties reacted along partisan lines on Monday to news that the U.S. House is speeding ahead with plans to remove President Donald Trump from office in his final days as Commander-in-Chief. The debate is poised to start Wednesday in Washington. McLean County Republican Party Chair Connie Beard on Monday criticized Congress for initiating impeachment, saying it's time to focus on finding and prosecuting those who participated in the riot and destruction at the U.S. Capitol. Why we're not putting all our energies into that process, as opposed to placing the blame on one individual, is what I find disturbing, she said, adding that the impeachment attempt is rehashing old efforts. But John Whelan, interim chair of the McLean County Democratic Party, said something has to be done. It needs to be addressed. Congress needs to hold the president and those other folks that enabled this whole situation to get out of hand the way they did. They need to be held accountable for it, he said. Trump faces a single charge, incitement of insurrection, from an impeachment resolution from Representatives David Cicilline of Rhode Island, Ted Lieu of California, Jamie Raskin of Maryland, and Gerald Nadler of New York. First, Democrats called on Vice President Mike Pence to invoke constitutional authority under the 25th Amendment to remove Trump from office before January 20th, when Democrat Joe Biden is to be inaugurated. It all adds up to stunning final moments for Trump's presidency as Democrats and a growing number of Republicans declare that he is unfit for office and could do more damage after inciting a mob that ransacked the U.S. Capitol in a deadly siege on Wednesday. President Trump gravely endangered the security of the United States and its institutions of government, reads the four-page impeachment bill. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi is recalling lawmakers to Washington for votes as more Republicans say it's time for Trump to resign. Republican Senator Pat Toomey of Pennsylvania joined GOP Senator Lisa Murkowski of Alaska over the weekend in calling for Trump to go away as soon as possible. Locally, U.S. Representative Adam Kinzinger, Republican from Shanahan, who has been critical of Trump, has become a vocal supporter of removing the president from office. Congressman Darren LaHood, Republican from Peoria, said last week that he does not back Trump's ouster. U.S. Representative Rodney Davis, Republican from Taylorville, has not indicated his support. Both Illinois U.S. Senators Tammy Duckworth and Dick Durbin, who are Democrats, have also called for moving forward. The attack on the Capitol came as lawmakers were confirming Biden's victory, which Trump has disputed for weeks, alleging fraud. Beard previously said there were indications of voter fraud, and the Bloomington Normal Democratic Socialists of America Party has called for her to resign over her support of the claims. With the impeachment, Beard said, I think it's a political stunt to try and do a final takedown of the president. Adding fuel to further splitting our good nation is not productive. Let's move forward to inauguration and bring our nation back together. Whelan said he thinks it's obvious Trump, as well as the lawmakers who spoke at the Washington rally, acted inappropriately, and to ignore it would be setting a precedent for this to happen again. Even if they just get it started and can't get it done before his term is actually over, they need to do that and hold him accountable. You've got to call it out when you see it, and they have that responsibility to do that, he said. Biden said he's had conversations with senators ahead of a possible impeachment trial, which some have worried would cloud the opening days of his administration. Senate Democratic leader Chuck Schumer was exploring ways to immediately convene the Senate for the trial as soon as the House acts, though Republican leader Mitch McConnell would need to agree. The president-elect suggested splitting the Senate's time. Perhaps go half a day on dealing with impeachment and half a day on getting my people nominated and confirmed in the Senate, as well as moving on the package for more COVID relief. As Congress briefly resumed on Monday, in an uneasiness swept the government. More lawmakers tested positive for COVID-19 after sheltering during the siege. And new security officials were quickly installed after the Capitol Police Chief and others were ousted in fallout from the attack on the iconic Dome of Democracy. Some GOP lawmakers, including Senator Josh Hawley, faced public blowback for their efforts on the day of the riot, trying to overturn Biden's election. House Republican leader Kevin McCarthy said in a letter to colleagues that impeachment at this time would have the opposite effect of bringing our country together. He said he would review possible censure of the president, but House Republicans are split and a few may vote to impeach. Pending impeachment, Democrats called on Vice President Mike Pence and the cabinet to invoke constitutional authority under the 25th Amendment to remove Trump from office before Inauguration Day. Their House resolution was blocked by Republicans. However, the full House is to hold a roll call vote on it Tuesday, and it is expected to pass. After that, Pelosi said Pence will have 24 hours to respond. Next would be the impeachment proceedings. Pence has given no indication he is ready to proceed on a course involving the 25th Amendment and a vote by a majority of the cabinet to oust Trump before January 20th. No member of the cabinet has publicly called for Trump to be removed from office in that way. Next, we have FBI warns of threats to state capitals. This is by Chris Coates and Lindsey Jones. Governor J.B. Pritzker on Monday said state officials are closely monitoring safety around the statehouse in Springfield after the FBI issued bulletins warning of plans for armed protests at 50 state capitals and in Washington ahead of Joe Biden's inauguration. Pritzker, during a press conference, said he would not discuss specific safety measures, but suffice it to say the Illinois State Police is quite well aware of the challenges that may crop up. The internal FBI bulletin warned as of Sunday that the nationwide protests may start later this week and extend through Biden's January 20th inauguration, according to two law enforcement officials who read details of the memo to the Associated Press. Investigators believe some of the people are members of extremist groups, the officials said. The bulletin was first reported by ABC. Armed protests are being planned at all 50 state capitals from 16 January through at least 20th January, at the U.S. Capitol from 17 January through 20 January, the bulletin said. According to one official, the officials were not authorized to speak publicly and spoke to the AP on condition of anonymity. State capitals across the nation stepped up security Monday, deploying National Guard units, SWAT teams, and extra police officers as several legislatures convened amid heightened safety concerns following last week's violence. Washington State Governor Jay Inslee activated hundreds of National Guard troops to help state police keep order at the state capitol and defend security fencing. At least two people were arrested on Monday, including a woman who, according to state police, used a recreational vehicle to block a roadway and refused to comply with orders to move. Later, about 20 people gathered outside the security fencing, including a man who tried to walk past authorities as lawmakers were to begin their session. He was taken into custody after shouting, "I have every right to witness this." At the Georgia Capitol, a state patrol SWAT team walked the perimeter wearing fatigues and carrying rifles, while lawmakers gathered inside for the start of a 2-year term. In Georgia, Republican Governor Brian Kemp and other officials approved construction of a fence around the Capitol last year after racial injustice protests. Kemp kept a group of National Guard soldiers on active duty to protect state properties since last summer when protesters smashed windows and set fire at state public safety headquarters in Atlanta. The governor increased security in Springfield last week after crowds stormed the U.S. Capitol as Congress was certifying Biden's election victory over President Donald Trump. Illinois lawmakers are having lame duck sessions to cap the 101st General Assembly before inauguration of the 102nd on Wednesday. House members are meeting off-site at Bank of Springfield Center because of COVID. Pritzker said the State Police, Illinois National Guard, and Illinois Emergency Management Agency are coordinating resources. "We really work very cohesively," he said. "They've done a terrific job so far." Illinois Secretary of State, Capitol Police spokesman Henry Haupt, said they're also working with various agencies to make sure the complex and surrounding areas remain safe, adding that the office does not discuss staffing levels or security protocols. Attorney General Daniel Hokanson, chief of the National Guard Bureau, told reporters Monday that the Guard is also looking at any issues across the country. "We're keeping a look across the entire country to make sure that we're monitoring and that our guards in every state are in close coordination with their local law enforcement agencies to provide any support requested," he said. Continuing on that topic, we have Dietz, Capital Attack, America at its Worst, by Lenore Sabota. Illinois State University President Larry Dietz called last week's violence at the U.S. Capitol a national tragedy and America at its worst, but also expressed optimism in messages to students, faculty, and staff. "The national tragedy was exacerbated by the realization that inadequate defense and security measures stood in stark contrast to what was observed during the demonstrations that occurred over the summer months," Dietz said in the messages sent over the weekend as ISU begins spring semester. "This difference in response is yet another reminder that our nation must reconcile its legacy of systemic racism and inequality if we are to realize our dream of a more perfect union," he said. But Dietz said the country also witnessed the best of our nation as, amid the chaos, we once again witnessed America's resolve as multitudes of people demanded accountability for those who incited violence and those who participated in the mayhem. At the same time events were unfolding in Washington, D.C. on Wednesday, faculty, staff, and graduate teaching assistants were taking part in the annual Teaching and Learning Symposium organized by ISU's Center for Teaching, Learning, and Technology. The theme of this year's symposium, conducted online, was Civic Engagement in Extraordinary Times. Dietz said this year's civic engagement theme couldn't be more appropriate. He said the symposium demonstrated that in a nation seemingly divided, good works can still bring us together. Dietz added, "As you continue to process Wednesday's traumatic events and their ramifications, please remember to invest extra time in your well-being, and please support those who are most vulnerable and may need an empathetic ear or a virtual shoulder to lean on." Spring classes started Monday at ISU, with most classes taking place online and on campus, and on-campus residents required to get tested for COVID-19 as the coronavirus pandemic continues. Other students are encouraged but not required to be tested. A little more than 3,000 students are living on campus, about half the usual capacity. Dietz asked students for their continued diligence in following all COVID-19 health and safety guidance. "In addition, I strongly encourage you to take advantage of on-campus COVID-19 testing as you return to campus." In his message to faculty and staff, Dietz addressed the pandemic situation in greater depth. "By and large, the Illinois State University community has thus far weathered the storm. As the fall 2020 semester progressed, the number of infections and positivity rates moderated from early semester spikes. Testing and mitigation processes became more efficient. There was some illness, as would be expected in a pandemic, but gratefully, ISU did not receive reports that COVID-19 claimed any lives in our campus community," he said. Noting the arrival of vaccines in McLean County, Dietz said each dose is a literal shot in the arm and a figurative booster for our tattered morale. However, despite the vaccine's arrival, the country remains in the pandemic's grip as infections, hospitalizations, and deaths continue to rise in many areas of the country. And the fear of another post-holiday coronavirus surge heightens concerns across the nation and right here in McLean County, said Dietz. About half of eligible administrative professional and civil service employees are using temporary work-at-home agreements. Such work arrangement will remain an option through the end of the fiscal year, according to Dietz. Turning our focus to COVID now, we have 10 more deaths reported by Kevin Barlow. 10 additional deaths due to COVID-19 were reported by the McLean County Health Department Monday. In addition, officials announced 278 new and probable cases, bringing the overall total of cases to 12,639 since mid-March. The new deaths include a man in his 60s, a man in his 70s, a woman in her 80s, and four women in their 90s who were associated with long-term care facilities, as well as a man in his 70s, a woman in her 80s, and a man in his 90s who were not associated with long-term care facilities. There have been 131 COVID-related deaths reported in McLean County. COVID-related deaths are not reported on the same day they occur. It may take days or even weeks to receive an official death certificate and cause of death. Through Monday in McLean County, three residents in their 30s have died with COVID, six in their 50s, 16 in their 60s, 32 residents who were in their 70s, 42 residents who were in their 80s, 30 residents in their 90s, and two over 100 years old. The rolling 7-day positivity rate through Sunday is 10.1%, a drop of a full percentage point from Friday's report. McLean County Health Administrator Jessica McKnight reported that as of Monday, 1,157 McLean County residents were isolating at home. Also, 11,318 residents have been released from isolation and are considered recovered. More than 189,100 tests have been completed in the county. Overall, the positivity rate is 6.7% since mid-March when testing began. As of Monday, 33 McLean County residents and 29 out-of-county residents are reported to be hospitalized with COVID-19. McKnight said 65% of the ICU beds are in use and 69% of total beds are in use. In DeWitt County, 37 new and probable cases were reported on Monday. Of those, 27 were located in Clinton and 6 in Farmer City. With those additional cases, DeWitt County now has a total of 1,110 cases and 19 deaths related to COVID-19. The Logan County Department of Public Health has confirmed 205 new and probable cases of COVID-19 in that county. The positive cases range in age from 3 months to 90 years old. In Ford County, 14 new cases were reported Monday, bringing the total to 1,341 since mid-March. There have been 39 COVID-19-related deaths in that county. In Livingston County, one death, a man in his 40s, and 77 new cases were reported on Monday. There has now been 62 deaths in the county. The total number of confirmed positive cases in Logan County is now 2,891, including 2,643 individuals who have recovered, 211 active cases, and 37 fatalities. The Illinois Department of Public Health reported 4,776 new confirmed and probable cases of the coronavirus and 53 additional deaths on Monday. IDPH is reporting a total of 1,033,526 cases, including 17,627 deaths since March. As of Sunday night, 3,540 Illinois residents were reported to be in the hospital with COVID-19. Of those, 759 patients were in the ICU and 401 patients with COVID-19 were on ventilators. The preliminary 7-day statewide test positivity from January 4th through Sunday is 8.9%. In Bloomington City News, we have Council Passes Initiative by Kevin Barlow. The City of Bloomington will join a nonprofit, nonpartisan organization in an effort to become more inclusive toward immigrants and all residents. The council voted 7-0 on Monday night, authorizing the city's participation in the Welcoming Network operated by Welcoming America. The Welcoming America initiative connects leaders in the community, both in government and nonprofit sectors. It builds on current work by providing methods and approaches to creating inclusive, welcoming places for immigrants. The initiative can also assist in creating policies and reinforcing welcoming principles. Welcoming America breaks barriers between the immigrant community and the rest of the population, said Ward 2 Alderwoman Donna Bolin. It does it by offering an invitation to collaboration and by offering it with an open hand rather than a closed fist. Ward 6 Alderwoman Jen Carrillo and Ward 8 Alderman Jeff Craybill, who voted against the resolution last month, did not attend Monday's meeting. The Welcoming America initiative is not related to a potential welcoming city ordinance that has been discussed previously by the council and is expected to be brought before the council later this month by Carrillo and Craybill. Carrillo shared an email with council members and on social media prior to the meeting. Quote, though Welcoming America and a welcoming city ordinance are not mutually exclusive measures, I hope you recognize that it was introduced by Councilmember Bolin in direct opposition to the community push for a welcoming ordinance, she wrote. It was not something she had ever raised publicly before folks started petitioning us to bring back the welcoming ordinance during public comment. This initiative is Councilmember Bolin's way of saving face while rejecting an ordinance to truly protect our immigrant neighbors, and it allows council members who have taken anti-immigrant positions to posture as though they are not anti-immigrant. Ward 1 Alderman Jamie Matthey said he has always liked the idea of the initiative. The topic of immigration in the United States is still volatile, but we have immigrants from all over the world and not just Mexico or Latin America, he said. I look forward to a process like this to make sure everyone who comes to Bloomington is welcome and finds an environment where they can be successful. There are a lot of people in the community who see this as an either this or the welcoming cities, and I reject that notion. I think they actually have the potential to work very well hand in hand together. Not in Our Town co-chairs Mike Majetka and Camille Taylor issued a joint statement in support of the initiative and also encouraged the council to go further. Not in Our Town supports the City of Bloomington passing the proposed Welcoming America initiative Monday, they said. At the same time, Not in Our Town also supports and highly encourages the city to pass a welcoming city ordinance. They are compatible. Welcoming America is an endorsement of a community-wide effort, including local organizations, businesses, and others, to create a community environment that is inclusive of our immigrant neighbors. A welcoming city ordinance is a specific directive to city staff and departments on how they respond to and treat immigrants. They are not mutually exclusive, but are mutually compatible. Kelsey Watznauer reports local businesses awarded grants. More than 100 McLean County businesses were awarded grants from an Illinois grant aimed at helping small business owners who face losses during the pandemic. Illinois' Business Interruption Grant Program was the largest state program of its kind, but only about 20% or 8,974 applicants received a grant. A total of $4,365,000 was awarded to businesses in McLean County, according to the Illinois Department of Commerce and Economic Opportunity. Governor J.B. Pritzker and the General Assembly created the BIG program using Federal Coronavirus Aid, Relief and Economic Security Act, or CARES Act, money to provide $580 million in economic relief for small businesses hit hardest by COVID-19. Statewide, the average grant award was $30,000. DCEO Director Aaron Guthrie said this federal funding has been exhausted, but the department continues to look for ways to help businesses statewide. We know that businesses are hurting, and we wish that Congress would provide more relief, Guthrie said. This virus has shut down so much of our economy, and that is a struggle for every person and business across our state. The other thing I would say is we're constantly working with our federal counterparts, with other sources, in ways that we can creatively provide relief to those businesses. According to DCEO, the second round of big funding focused on downstate businesses impacted, with specific emphasis on music and performing arts centers, museums, movie theaters, and other entertainment venues struggling with the ongoing COVID restrictions. Pandemic-related shutdowns and other hardships are lasting much longer than anyone expected, and our small businesses are continuing to fight hard to adapt and survive, Brady said. These grants will help many businesses in our communities hang on. Nearly half of all BIG, or big funds, or more than $130 million, went to restaurants and bars, according to DCEO. The second round of big funding distributed $3,825,000 to businesses in McLean County. Awarded the highest amount locally, these seven businesses will receive $150,000 from the program. Four Seasons Health Club, Holiday Inn and Suites in Bloomington, The Residence Inn, Fairfield Inn and Suites, Distill Restaurant and Brew Works, The Hampton Inn and Suites in Bloomington Normal, and Medici in Normal. Next, we have the Illinois VA head resigns. The director of Illinois' Veterans Affairs Department is leaving the post, Governor J.B. Pritzker announced on Monday. Pritzker said the departure of Linda Chapa-Lavia was a mutual decision that comes in the wake of a deadly outbreaks of COVID at state veterans' homes, including the LaSalle Veterans Home, where 39 residents died of the coronavirus. What we want to do is restore confidence that people have in our Veterans Affairs Department, and we want to do our best to take care of our veterans, Pritzker said during a news conference in Springfield. Pritzker's office said the Department of Veterans Affairs are attempting to determine what caused the outbreak at the state-run LaSalle Veterans Home in LaSalle. The outbreak was identified in late October when a staff member and a resident tested positive for the virus. An outbreak at the Quincy home has killed at least 17 veterans, and at the Mateño home, at least 19 veterans have died from the virus. A former Democratic state representative from Aurora, Chapa-Lavia, was appointed by Pritzker in 2019. She testified Monday for nearly 3 hours before the House Judiciary Civil Committee. Paloma Republican Representative Randy Fries noted the criticism Chapa-Lavia, an Army veteran, has faced and asked her if the pressure was too great for her to continue in her job effectively. I worked hard for my veterans, and I take that as an honor every day, she said. But the pressure is the pressure. I signed up for this job, and I'm honored to do that. I also received by the Illinois Veterans Assistance Committee that we have in the state that they're 100% behind me, and now we've conducted, and how we've conducted, and how we're working hard to make sure that this is under control. That will conclude the first part of the Pantograph for Tuesday, January 12th, 2021. I'm Janice Schweizer, and I will return shortly with the second half.